Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hello, podcast world. This is Andy Richter, and you are listening to The Three Questions. And I'm very excited to have somebody that, well, we've met in person at once, but, you know, we're Twitter pals. We're online pals. And it's the very funny and very witty Ira Madison III. Hello.
Hi, Andy.
How are you?
I'm good. You know.
I'm good. I was just saying before this, you're the first person I've interviewed, I think, that is sitting behind or sitting in front of lots of books.
You know, I'm really trying to up the reading into my brand, you know?
Yeah. I made a joke on Twitter. I said, I would do that with all my on-screen stuff, but all my books have the word piss in their title. So whenever I've done my pundit spots on MSNBC, they don't like that. Now you are a Midwesterner.
I am. I'm from Milwaukee.
Has your family been in Milwaukee for a long time or?
Yeah, since like the 70s, late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah. And how was that? How was growing up in Milwaukee?
Yeah, it's quaint, you know. Quaint and cold. A lot of white people.
Yeah.
Not that many in the city, actually. Milwaukee has a heavily diverse population.
Yeah.
You know,
people don't realize that. You know,
you wouldn't.
You think it's one big beer hall from, you know, just like what history has been, you know.
Or Laverne and Shirley, Happy Day stuff. You're like, you think, oh, it's just this. I'm like, well, that was 1952.
Yeah. It's a huge Hispanic population there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
were you from downtown? Did you live downtown or?
No. I lived sort of the east side of town, like River Edge. Not me calling that the wrong neighborhood. I lived on like the east side of town briefly.
You're gonna be finished in Milwaukee, if you get this right.
Lived on like the east side of town briefly. We grew up on like Booth Street and like sort of Silver Spring Drive. Lived by this army base because my grandmother was in the army. She was a sergeant major in the army. And then at some point we moved to near Wauwatosa, you know.
Okay.
So yeah, not right in the little Wauwatosa village. We're still part of Milwaukee proper, but we moved more towards the north side of the city.
Yeah, Wauwatosa it's kind of like a cute little place, right, isn't it?
Yeah.
You
know, the mall is there.
It's been years, but I just, you know, mm-hmm. I miss all those Wisconsin names too, you know. like hearing people try, you know, to say Waukesha County and just getting it terribly wrong, you know.
Waukesha, West Alice, Racy, all sorts of places.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're still there, and I got my Bucks hat on now.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah.
Cream City. Oh, right, because of the bricks.
The bricks. Yeah.
Right.
Which is funny because most people just assume that it's because of like dairy.
or how white the town is. Yeah. But I mean, but to call yourself Cream City as opposed to like Milk City is really like we're the best whites of all.
Yeah.
Are you a baseball fan?
No. Oh, well, this is the Bucks hat. This is the basketball hat.
Oh, the basketball team. Oh, okay. Because, yeah, because the...
But the Brewers are fine.
Yeah. Because they've incorporated that into their whole thing, too, the Brewers hat.
Okay. I have... maybe I should get some Brewers hats. Yeah, I don't really watch baseball, though.
I'm boring. I'm a late-onset baseball fan. It was forced down my throat for years as a child, and then in my 40s, I started caring about it. I don't know. It's just part of.
Enjoyed going.
Yeah,
like you can sit and watch a game, and it Absolutely. Seems more fun. At yeah. home, it is very slow.
Yeah, it's good to nap in front of Yeah, no, I'm that way with virtually any sporting event. I'll go see it live, but I just can't give a shit that much if it's on TV, you know.
Mm-hmm. Same. You know, I have a friend who tries to take me to I have a friend who watches the Lakers religiously.
Yeah.
And I can watch a game with him if it's in person, because you know you're yeah. going to Staples, you know, you feel like you're doing something.
Yeah. And also they are amazing human beings.
Yeah.
Just like specimens, amazing specimens of the human animal doing amazing things, you know?
Yeah.
They're all giants, first of all. It's like, holy shit, there's that many big people on one play, you know, in one place. your mom was a single mother, correct? Is that, I had that in my notes.
Yes, yes, yeah. She was.
Where did your dad ever live with you guys, or?
No. I mean, well, at some point when I was younger.
So
I hadn't seen him really since I was I don't know, six or so. He's somewhere. My sister's seen him. Other people in my family have seen him. I have made the choice not to.
Yeah, yeah. I understand. What did your mom do? Was she in the military too, or?
No, she's had a lot of different jobs. She was a substitute teacher at once. She was a deputy sheriff once.
Wow.
And now she's currently works for the post office.
Where was she a deputy sheriff?
In Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee. Wow. How was that?
Not that stressful, but yeah. I mean, it was young enough. I was young enough to the point where I didn't hate all law enforcement.
It was SCAB.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely give me a few more years and I would have been having some convos.
Yeah, yeah. Well, did she ever talk about, was there did she feel like there was racism within the, you know,
I'm
the
sure.
sheriff's department? Because
that was under David Clark. Yeah.
That's the guy with the cowboy hat, the African American with the cowboy hat. Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. Remember
he's
him?
A nut job. Yeah. Yeah. He sort of dropped off the face of the earth.
He's hiding somewhere, yeah. I'm sure.
Maybe COVID got him. I can't see that guy ever wearing a mask. So. Well, what kind of kid were you? I mean, are you an only child? Did your mom, do you have any siblings or?
I have a younger sister by 2 years. And what did I do? You know, I read a lot books.
Yeah.
I read comics a lot. You know, there was a comic book store called Collector's Edge Comics that was about a mile from my house. So mm-hmm. I used to walk there every Saturday morning to get comic books. And just very quiet. Did a lot of reading. Watched everything, TV and movies.
Yeah, yeah. That was I would say that probably 60% of the child care for me was a television. It ended up being like a visual leash. Like you know, like you, the way you tie up a dog, you just put me in front of a TV and I would stay there and not get into trouble. I want to ask about the comic books. Cause I, you know, when I was a kid, I used to read comic books somewhat. A, we didn't have comic book stores. There was just sort of like what you got at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. So I never experienced the comic book store sort of ethos until I was younger. But who are some of your favorites and, you know, and what type of stories appeal to you most?
Well, my favorite was Spider-Man, and he was actually my first tattoo.
I see it.
And then there's that, and then there's a Batman one too. Uh-huh. I like them, you know, as a big X-Men, Avengers, Fantastic Four fan. So those were my faves, you know.
Did you go to public school?
I went to a public school part of the time, at a Montessori school part of the time. One of the schools was, Highland. That was a younger school. The Golden My Year was 3rd through 5th grade.
Morris. My Year.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, is that like a Jewish day school or something? Or was it a.
I think it's just named after her.
Oh. Okay.
Because she lived in Milwaukee for a bit. So.
What? I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. So, to hung out with her all the time.
Yep. Beer and pretzels with Golden Eye Ear.
Then there was Samuel Morris Middle School. I do not remember who Samuel Morris is. Morse code?
I think it is.
Well, there we go.
See, there you go. That's all you need for Jeopardy is just to be kind of vaguely sure. Like, okay, yeah. Samuel Morris. I think that's Morse code.
Yeah. And then high school was a private school, Marquette High School. It was an all-boys Catholic. All-boys Jesuit school.
Oh, okay. And how was that? I mean, Jesuits kind of have a mixed reputation of being pretty good and devoted to education and then also being awful and punitive.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a mix of both. It was good. And it was awful.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it was one of my first experiences with all like a predominantly white school, you know, and also just, the economic status of everyone at the school was very high. So,
yeah.
Did
you get kind of outright ostracization?
No, not outright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, did you have friends? I mean, there was, you know.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, I had friends.
Yeah,
you know. It was lovely for a lot of reasons. You know, I did have quite a few friends at school. You know, I wasn't like an outcast at school. You know, I lived a very nice life. Mm-hmm. But you know, there are also truly horrendous people that I did go to school with.
Yeah. Welcome to the world. Yep. May I ask, were you out in high school or no?
Not till college.
Not till college. Was there any teasing about like? Did you get teasing? About being gay?
Not really.
Yeah.
No, maybe like my first year. I remember first semester, first year, there was like two evil people who did.
Yeah, yeah.
But they both ended up getting arrested.
Nice.
In school.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of them, for terrorism.
Really?
Yeah. I think he like wanted to blow up our school. So there was that. He was kicked out. And then his friend, he was arrested because they were they had a weed grow house in one of their attics, but were also robbing homes in the suburbs.
Wow, you're like a magnet to really draw off the bad ones.
Yeah, I know.
They come for you. What kind of stuff did you do in school? Were you like?
I did theater.
Theater, yeah.
Theater and but was not really cast in anything. So I did stagehand stuff. But then that led me to playwriting. So yeah, then
that was your major, correct?
That was my major in grad school. Yeah. Uh-huh. Theater was my major in undergrad, and then graduate school I did playwriting and screenwriting, got my MFA in dramatic writing. And high school was where I first learned that like I liked writing.
Yeah.
For people, you know, instead of writing like novels or something.
Like writing things that you would hear people then say out loud. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, was it like did you have like some big dream to be an actor, and was it hard when you didn't get casted, or did you just kind of feel I want to be a part of this?
Yeah. You know, I liked it. It was Ariel. I wanted to be a part of their world.
Yeah.
And then didn't happen. Didn't happen. So I figured out something else, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Now where was undergrad? Where'd you go to undergrad?
Loyola, Chicago.
Loyola in Chicago. And how was your Chicago time? Did you like living there?
I did.
As opposed to Milwaukee, you know?
Yeah. You know, Chicago was a great time because, you know, I was away from home, but also close enough to home that I could go back when I needed to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really like an hour and a half with no traffic. And it was fun. You know, it was a good city. I like Chicago.
Yeah, I do too. And it's a good place to be your first step away from home if you're going to live in cities.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's kind of like a good starter city. Because I know when I left a small town, I don't think I could have handled New York or Los Angeles. I think I needed to kind of have a little bridge into it. And then grad school was where?
Grad school was Tisch, NYU.
Oh, nice. Nice. Now, how was that transition from Chicago to New York?
I moved to New York actually like a couple of years before I did grad school. So it was actually a lovely transition, you know. By the time I started at NYU, I was already living in New York and used to the city. So
yeah. And were you writing? Were you getting things performed? You know, your pieces performed or?
A few here and there, but mostly I was, I also did journalism in high school.
Oh, okay.
And so that's what I was sort of doing to pay the bills for in, New York right before grad school. I was interning at a couple places. And then I went back to school for dramatic writing, my MFA. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved here to Los Angeles, I got back into like writing for like BuzzFeed, GQ, Vulture, that kind of stuff before my screenwriting took off.
How now, when you go from Chicago to New York, how do you start writing? I mean, what did you have connections of any kind, or did you know anybody?
No, I applied for an internship and got one, and so.
Yeah. At
Radar Magazine.
Oh, okay. That doesn't exist anymore, does it?
No. Yeah, I think it's like Radar Online now, and it's like some celeb trash site. But the old Radar Magazine was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I remember it, yeah. And it was still kind of celeb trash, but, you know, fun celeb trash. So
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, did you get to write stuff there, or was that – I mean,
yeah, I wrote stuff for their website every day. And then I started working at OK Magazine. And then I was at Page Six Magazine.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And how, I mean, were you happy to be doing that kind of tabloidy stuff?
Or,
yeah.
No.
I mean, it's got to have some fun, but it also has to.
I was definitely fired from OK Magazine.
Yeah,
because I was tasked with whenever they would have polls about like, do you believe this person should break up with this person or whatever? Like, I had to go to Bryant Square Park and like interview people about it,
about dumb shit.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Most of the time, I did not, and then I would just decide myself. So sorry.
And just make it up.
Fake news.
Oh my God. It threw off all the data. of who should break up with whom.
I know.
And going back, they're going to have to change all of the sociological texts about about reader polls. And did they find that out? I mean, how did you?
No.
No.
You just. I think I was actually lucky because I took a very long lunch one day. Yeah, I had friends who were also there who were interning at like a different magazine, and so like I went to lunch with them, and then I was just walking around the city, and then came back, and they were like, "Wow, you took a lunch," and I was like, "You said I could take a lunch," and they were like, "Well, not that long," and I was like, "Well, sorry."
Yeah. Now, I mean, imagine that. Is that a pretty fun life to be a young person and to be kind of working at these magazines? And I imagine not
Radar. Yes. That, yeah. There. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there at least fun people around you, or is it the atmosphere?
There were some.
Yeah.
But weird. I don't know. Page Six magazine. My boss was this woman from Jersey who was constantly closing the office door and arguing with her boyfriend on the phone.
Oh, wow.
So. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. Now, what spurred the move to L.A.?
Well, once I finished at NYU, I wanted to move here and write for TV, Andy.
Yeah. What shows were particularly inspirational to you? Like what shows are you watching and being like, I want to get on that?
Well, first, you know, it was like Buffy was my first love. And then, like, I still watch, like, Dates of Our Lives every day. I love that. You know, those were things that as a kid watching with my family got me into like.
Have you watched Days of Our Lives your whole life?
Yeah. It was a thing that got me into TV as a kid, you know, and like it felt a lot like my comic books. You know, it was like an ongoing story, you know. That was my draw into being like, oh, I would love to do that someday. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. And then when I went to grad school, it seemed possible. So moved right away, like the week after graduation to L.A.
Oh, wow. What was it about, like, as a kid, what do you think it is about that ongoing story that drew you into it so much?
You know, it's you're following different characters every day, you know, or every month, depending on if it's a comic, you know, and it's just like you're immersed in, like, their lives and in a way that you can sort of escape your own.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? It's a lot like reading, but it is... you know, it's continuous, you know, it's not finite.
Yeah. And is part of it that you were watching it with family members? I mean, is it sort of like a communal escape?
I watched some with family, but then I really just started going off on my own.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I have a younger brother and sister. They're actually my half brother and sister. They're twins and they were born when I was 9. And I had a great aunt that came and stayed with us to help with the babies, and she watched all the ABC ones, the Ryan's
All My Children, One Life to Live.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
General Hospital.
Yeah, she watched the, and Ryan's Hope was, I think, a half hour at the very beginning. Yeah. But she watched the Irish one. Yes, exactly. And Mira. And Mira's in that. But she watched the whole block of them and then would talk about them with my mom and get them all like, interwoven. Mm-hmm. Like they ended up being, she would say like that two characters were starting to date and it's like, no, that's a character from another show. Like it all became just one twisting sort of like bong hit for her to just kind of, you know, escape things. And then it just became a habit and but for me, it was just All My Children. I watched All My Children.
Mm-hmm. But it was nice, you know?
Yeah.
It was like
for 16 years I watched that show. Yeah.
And I remember sitting around, you know, hearing older family members talking about like the characters, talking about them like they were neighbors we did.
Yeah, so, exactly. You know? Yeah. And it's just pure escapism and it's like a little bit trashy, but you're still kind of invested. It's just, I mean.
No, it's the same as now when my friends and I will talk about and dissect like Bravo, you know, like Real Housewives things. It feels exactly the same as when my family used to be like talking about like those characters, you know.
And I also just love now being involved in entertainment and knowing like how those are made and how like just what a meat grinder it is, what like a narrative meat grinder it is to just crank it out. And
yeah,
it's an amazing little facet of the industry that I feel like is kind of, you know, it's slipped, you know, a lot of them. In fact, I think all my children's just online now, if it's even on anymore.
Oh, it's off.
Is it off? Gone? Yeah.
Yeah. Weirdly, it went to, when they canceled All My Children and One Life to Live, they went to Hulu. But if I don't know if you recall, it was, they were like two of the first things to ever debut on Hulu.
No, I don't remember.
You know, yeah. So yeah, it was like, it was in the early days of, it was like, oh, this is some new internet thing, you know, ABC Disney's doing, right? And then you know, they only lasted like a year or so, because that was definitely pre the era of people tuning in to watch things on streaming,
right, to accept it, because it did kind of feel, I mean I have an old man's bias against a lot of, I mean, not so much anymore, but like when there were people that would, you know, they were making a living doing a show on YouTube. In my estimation, that was like, oh my God, that's, you know, like you're in the wasteland. You know, you're like, you're on public access or something.
And of course, it felt weird then, you know? And like, I remember people being like, oh, my older parents will like never watch anything on, like, they'll never watch their shows on Hulu, you know? Yeah. Like, this is going to ruin it. And then like, the shows did get canceled because not enough people watched it. But now just the way that everyone watches like Netflix, Hulu, like everything, you know, like if you'd kept them on long enough, people would have been watching.
right.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in LA, a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in LA, debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
Now, in L.A., did you have any connections when you came out here? Or?
Yeah, you know, my dad was a famous actor in the 50s. That's how I got all my work.
Still didn't talk to him, but no. I exploited the connections.
I certainly would have. but no, my I had a friend who was in who was like a writer's assistant and stuff here. Like he was my first friend when I moved here, my friend Michael. And so I met friends through him and had no really other connections here at all. Yeah. So yeah. Built it from the ground up.
Nice. Oh, you know, yeah. Fuck all those people that are out here that had it all handed to them. How do you start getting people to notice you and take you, you know, seriously as a hireable entity?
My first jobs for my first like 4 or 5 years here were was waiting tables, like being a barista, and then I was just like using any other time to like write maybe some funny freelance things online, you know, mm-hmm. or like use my social media presence. But actually, I really didn't have like a social media presence that like got me a job that much, you know. Like, I mean, it got me jobs later, but it was because I was doing some freelance stuff that got me a job at BuzzFeed. Uh-huh. And working there is when I feel like I started cultivating like my using the internet to really sort of like propel my career, you know, mm-hmm. because that's how I left there to go and work at New York Magazine. And then I left there to go work at MTV News. And then I got jobs at GQ and like Daily Beast and stuff like that. So that is what I was doing. You know, I was very much the game of you could work at one of these places forever, you know, and have like a steady job, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe. What is a steady job in the media? But I was using it more as like, okay, cool, I'm at BuzzFeed for a year, and like, how can I use that to get to another place? And then it was quickly just trying to go from place to place to get where I want it eventually.
Just to keep the movement going. I mean, because it didn't necessarily seem like it was steps up, or was it just kind of moving around?
Oh, it was steps up.
Yeah.
It was steps up. I mean, most of the reason I kept leaving to go to another place was money, you know?
Yeah.
It's much easier to.
Is that how that works?
It's much easier to increase your paycheck, you know, when you are moving over to another place,
I'm familiar with the concept.
As opposed to trying to convince the place you work at to give you a raise.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of, I need more money. Time to convince these other people to hire me and then lie about how much I'm making so I can make more.
Right.
So that was the scam I was pulling for years. And then writing stuff really just was... that's where it does come out to, you know, like that tried and true thing of like making connections. So, you know, my current manager is someone who I became friends with in Los Angeles through years of living here.
Yeah.
And then she eventually, when I launched like the podcast, then was like, oh, let me read something of yours. And then she did. And then now she's repping me. So.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
Yeah.
Now, your social media following, was it mostly Twitter?
It's mostly Twitter.
Yeah.
I wish it were more on Instagram. I wish just people found me prettier than they found me amusing.
Yeah, Instagram, I just can't. I mean, I just am too old and fat for Instagram. I got the dog, you know, I'll post the dog. Yeah. But it's too late. And I also, too, it's like for me, words are the thing. It's not... Like some funny pictures, sure, are great. But for me, it's words, you know.
I love words, yeah, you know. But now I'm just like, who cares about my words? Care about my face.
Boy, you really have changed. LA has changed you. You're in a canyon house now. Probably, you know, slathering creams and balms. Pricing plastic surgery.
I certainly do the creams, yeah. The bombs.
Now, when your social media, when it starts to grow, because for me, you know, like social media for me, I'd been on TV for years. So, you know, like I kind of had a built-in following. I mean, how does it kind of start to build for you? You know, are there like a couple of, like, is there like one tweet that gets, you know, that people go crazy?
Yeah. You know, I guess it was always just sort of like tweets that would like sort of go viral. And then like some people follow you. And then like, you know, like you, someone like important seems to follow you. And then like you follow them back. And that also never goes away. weirdly, for me, you know, it'll be like, oh my God, why did this celebrity follow me?
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah,
gotta follow them back. Unless they're crazy. Then you ignore, then you slowly just pretend that they didn't do that.
Just back away or hit that. I have, to me, it's the mute button. I have such a hard time.
Love a mute. Or the soft block.
Yeah. Oh, the soft block is the best.
Because then it's like, then they won't see you.
Yes. No, that I do for assholes, but like mild assholes. Now, especially now with the election, I just feel like support of Trump, I can block you. Cause I mean,
there's nowhere to go beyond that.
It's indefensible at this point. It's just like,
and if you run into them, who cares?
Yeah. And I don't have, and I have no qualms. Whereas before you might, you know, and it's okay. I've always been a Democrat or a liberal or whatever the fuck you progressive, whatever the name is. And you can't be one if you're the other and all the shit. But I certainly was never conservative.
Yeah.
And, but there's like, I did feel like, and I still feel like, well, sure. Okay. You can be really into taxes being low and that's your whole thing, you know, but when it gets wrapped up with all this other completely heinous bullshit, it's like, no, that's just indefensible and I can't do it. But yeah, then the crazies, like I still have things like for me, it's like Chris Evans follows me and I've, you know what I mean? He's younger than me and everything, but it's like fucking Captain America, you know, like, and he's like when if he retweets something, about Captain America retweeted me, you know, and he out of the blue because just from politics, you know, political stuff, he DM'd me and just like said, like, you seem like a real cool dude. And it was like 2 days of feeling like,
Captain, all right,
Cap gave me his tip of the cap.
Well, thanks, I'm friends Cap. With his brother.
Oh, are you?
not him though.
Keep trying. Keep trying.
I prefer the brother.
Yeah. Now your social media presence is fairly apolitical. I mean, you know, you can, of course, make inference, you know, you can make inferences of what your stands are. And is that just kind of how you are in life, too? I mean, because where I met you was at a political fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're obviously active.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, I feel like, well, one, you know, like my podcast is at Crooked Media. So, you know, like people know at least I'm left leaning, you know, people who listen to the show know that I am a little bit further left than some of the other boys on Pop Save. But, you know, I feel like I'm black and I'm also gay. And so it's like what most of my politics, like, thankfully, you can assume online, you know, and like I get political with like making sure to tweet about people to donate to, you know, like races and stuff. And, you know, but like in terms of like a Twitter that's just sort of like constantly talking about everything all day, you know, I can't be Mark Ruffalo. or even Chris Evans, you know, or even like other people who are just sort of like, I feel like there are people that you follow for political reasons,
right?
You know, like you follow them because like I'm getting the politics from you. For me, it's like I guess you're following me because I'm funny, I talk about like cultural things that I like, and like I will then occasionally dip into like what needs to be said about like obviously like race and like you know, things that are going on with like LGBTQ community, like, but, and you know, like other political stuff. But, you know, like I would find that like 60% of my Twitter is just me trying to like have a good time and stay sane.
I know. That's what I love about your feed. And I think, I can't remember why, you know, you just have been there for a while, but
it feels like I've been there forever.
No, but I mean, but in my Twitter experience, I mean, then that's how it kind of got it started to get to know you. And I think it was when you were you used to, and you don't do it anymore. You name the podcast Keep It.
Yeah. You used to do, that's right. People, I used to say it.
Yeah. For what people, it kind of was like a regular feature of your feed.
Yeah.
it was always a good, you know, I mean, explain, like, tell people if they don't, you know, so.
So it was like when I didn't like something, you know, like you would, it would be like Mel Gibson making Passion of the Christ 2, you know,
yeah,
you would
yeah.
just be like, keep it. And that became like a thing then that like other people would use and they would at me when they used it. And so it became like a catchphrase for lack of a better term. And then, when I was developing the show with Crooked, I sort of knew like I had to call it that, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm very glad I did, because now it's more into, it's just the name of the show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I would feel honestly insane if I were still years later
pushing it
typing keep
it. Yeah. Well, it is such a good dismissive, you know, keep it. Like I was just imagining like, saying it like somebody, you know, like, listen, I've got this thing, keep it, you know, just to zip it. Now, what was your first job writing television that wasn't, or that was, you know, fictional, that was a narrative kind of job?
A couple of years ago, it was Daybreak, this Netflix show, and it was a zombie teen show. Lasted one season.
Yeah.
Thanks, Netflix.
And how was that experience? I mean, was it?
Oh, it was great.
Were you like thrilled to finally be, you know?
Yeah, you know, because it was based on a comic book, but we did a lot of our own creating of stuff too, and it just felt great, you know, like that my first gig was really just immersing myself in something that I loved forever, you know? And the character whose episode I wrote, you know, was also this gay black character who's like very into like kung fu and like samurai movies. And so like his episode was a lot of fun to do, you know, and it was different from the other episode. Each episode was like narrated by each character. So like mine got to be, you know, different than the other ones and felt very comic booky and was narrated by, RZA from Wu-Tang, you know?
Oh,
so
wow.
Like it was, yeah, it was a really great first experience.
That's that really like, fun. Yeah.
That I feel like people never get to do, you know?
No, nobody, like, usually people's, you know, television writing career is like writing for some shitty derivative sitcom, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, like,
and then 6 years later, you're like, okay, now I'm on a show I like.
Yeah, yeah. Had you been writing like pilots? What kind of stuff were you writing up to then to get that job? Were you writing your own stuff or spec scripts?
I had plays and then spec scripts from that I never see the light of day again. I stopped writing spec scripts after grad school
because
it felt like no one wanted to read them anymore.
It seems like a weird thing to do.
As much as some TV producers online on Twitter, there's always a point when someone who like is a TV showrunner loves to tweet out like, "I miss spec scripts. I would read a good spec," and I'm always like, "No, you wouldn't." And
why?
Your assistant would read it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. For people that don't know, because some people don't know, it's like, if you want to be a TV writer and you say like, okay, I'm going to write a Big Bang Theory script, and then you write a Big Bang Theory script, it's like fan fiction, but with television shows. And it's always, whenever I've read them, it always just seems to me, and I'll do like, you know, because like throughout my career, there part of being a comic actor like I am is that they always are like, when it comes time to like, let's see if we can get you a show, you go on these arranged dates with writers. And there's so many of them like, here's my Seinfeld spec. And I just feel like, I don't want to read your fucking Seinfeld spec. I want to like, I want to read like you. I want to, you know, because it's like, you are sort of, it is an arranged marriage when you sign on to do something like that with somebody. And it's like, I want to know who you are and not like what George Costanza jokes you can write.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it was it was definitely useful in graduate school, you know, because like you could learn the structure of a show
right
very easily. There are characters already created for you. So you know, you don't have to like think of that aspect first. So like, love them for learning, but you know, like, I am never going to write one ever again in my life. And it's funny now, you know, just because it's like, you're thinking of an adult trying to write one, like who already has like a job, you know, and stuff like to try and get new ones. Like the idea of it was always be a showrunner would be like, oh, to see that you can write in the voice of like this show or other characters, you know? And I'm like, well, most of you just rewrite everything anyway. So what does it matter if I can fit the voice of the show?
Most of the, I mean, from my perspective, most of it is like, is this, does this person have a creative, funny spark? And I found too, from my transition into working in late night and that being my entree into professional show business, and then coming out here and being in the sitcom world, just so much people saying like, well, you really have to know the structure. You have to know structure, structure, structure. Mm-hmm. And it always was the most unfunny motherfuckers that were like, you got to know structure. And I just feel like everyone knows structure. It's been drilled into their fucking heads. Like everyone could recite the structure of a sitcom in their sleep, you know,
because exactly.
You just know how they work. You know their rhythm. And they, it's always, I think all so many of these rules that people have are just barriers that they put up to protect the fact that there's like people that I'm from a comedy perspective that aren't that funny, you know, that just aren't that funny, you know?
Also, speaking of sitcoms, I told you, I literally watched everything growing up and that made me want, I had this thing where I would like watch everything and like I'd even had VHS tapes and I would record episodes of things week to week, label them, and then like come back. So it would be like if I were watching like all of Alias, you know, like I could go back during the summer and be like, well, here's all my Alias VHSs and I could watch that. And I did that with most shows that I loved. And I used to have Andy Richter Controls the Universe all on VHS.
Oh, thank you.
It's probably somewhere in my basement back in Milwaukee.
That's where it should be. Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, no, that was, I got lucky in that my first kind of job where I was number one on the call sheet is something I feel very proud of. Mm. And that I feel also, I don't feel sheepish about saying when somebody says, I like that show, I feel like I was responsible enough for the psychology and the personality of that show to say thank you, as opposed to like, well, it really is just a vehicle that I sort of got in and went for a ride in, you know? So,
Well, that's great.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. And it is, you know, I try to try to remember it on, especially now sitting at home with nothing to do, feeling like I'm retired or like, did I think I used to.
Is it streaming somewhere?
Yeah. No, it isn't.
It isn't. I don't think, okay. Yeah.
It might have been on Hulu for a minute.
I think it briefly was.
Yeah.
And I think it was who created that with you? It
Victor
was
Fresco. Victor Fresco created it.
I think it was on after because for a while Victor's other show was on.
With the Better Off Ted?
Yes, Better Off Ted. It was on, I think that was on Hulu for a bit too, as well.
And then he did Santa Clarita Diet. Which I he had me come and play like the biggest asshole in the world. and actually we just did, you know, I mean, the way they're doing with all of these, we did a cast reunion table read of Andy Richter Controls the Universe.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And but of course we planned it and then it happened to be up against the fucking Princess Bride one the exact same time, exact same night. But, you know, it was fun. And it was really fun to see those people. You know, I mean, it is weird how, like, memory works where there, I was, it's like a file folder in your brain that you open up and all of a sudden it's like, you know, there's like, oh, yeah, that and that and that. It's really, it's really good. But, yeah, that and Andy Barker PI, I'm very proud of those shows. you know, I still kind of, that out of that whole process, I think I ended up just feeling like I don't necessarily need to be the star of the thing. Like I don't, and I also kind of am realistic enough to be like, well, I did that three times and all three times it was very short lived. So maybe that's not the thing, you know, it's like, you know, it's like I climbed that ladder three times and found that some of the rungs were broken. So I don't think I'm going to climb that ladder again. But I certainly am I'm very happy and proud to have been part of something that was meaningful to some people, you know, like especially to people who are for whom it is important to make television comedy. And the Conan show, especially that way. I mean, to have been on a show that meant for people what the similar shows meant for me coming up.
Yeah, you know, it inspired a lot of people to do comedy or be like, oh, you can make, even, you know, even if it was short-lived, you know, like the fact that it was on Fox and watching it, you were at least knowing that some people were trying to make comedy that was funny.
Yeah, that is, and that does end up kind of being the most important part, the doing of the thing, you know. And that's the rationale because the boatload of money never pulled up and dumped all the cash on me. So I probably, you know, if that had happened, I'd probably be like, well, the money's really nice, but because that never really happened. I mean, granted, I'm relative to most humans, I'm just fine. But, you know, I don't own multiple homes, you know, that kind of thing. And that's what happens. I'm sure that probably follows, like you think like I create a show and then I could, like, do you have those thoughts of like that kind of fantasy of like, because when you're in this business, you are like conceivably just a few steps on the flow chart away from crazy fame and wealth.
Yeah, you know, I think I just want two.
Two?
Houses. You know, it'd be nice to have where you live, and then it'd be nice to have something in like another country.
Yep. At this point,
the escape.
At this point,
not one where you're even like, ooh, there's this empty place, you know, like you probably have to rent it out.
Well, I, you know, also too, having children that went to private school, that's that they carry a beach house in their minds.
Yeah.
Just because of how much that cost. I feel like I've been sending someone to college for the last 15 years. Well now, what the podcast that you're doing on Keep It, your co-hosts are Louis Vertel
and Aida Osman.
And how do you know those guys?
Louis I've known for like 7 years or so. A while back when I was first moved here. And then Aida, we met last year because our previous co-host exited. And so we were just doing a little search over the summer and we really clicked with her. And so it's been great. She's been on for 50 episodes almost now.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because she's kind of new. I know her from Twitter and she's new to LA, is she not?
Yeah, she's younger. And she was doing like a lot of stand-up comedy and things in New York and moved here to do the show and write on Big Mouth. So.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And they're both so smart and so funny. Louis is like has one of the most enviable brains around. He's so smart and so funny. And what are you working on right now? I mean, what are you kind of,
you know, I, finished writing on Q-Force just recently. Gabe Liebman and Mike Schur created the show, starring Sean Hayes. And it was about, it's a gay James Bond. It's animated.
Oh, cool.
Animated. So that'll be on Netflix next year. So,
oh, nice.
We just finished working on that. We're still animating.
How many episodes?
10.
Nice.
Yeah, animated. I do some voices in it. So
that's nice.
Yeah.
Cha-ching.
Yeah.
Got your SAG card?
I am in SAG.
Nice. There you go.
Yeah, I got the join letter when I did cameo in, well, guest star in You season two. Yeah, on Netflix. And what was actually funny about it was, obviously, so when the SAG sent the letter and they were like, oh, you can join now. And it's like, because of your principal role in this, I guess because of the drop-down menu, You is right next to Young Sheldon. So I got a letter from SAG that said, because of your role in Young Sheldon.
Oops.
So we can find it somewhere. I hope I still have that letter because I wanted to get it framed.
And you didn't like correct them. You just let it be Young Sheldon. Like,
thank you.
Yeah. Yep. I was in Young Sheldon. The apartment building that I lived in had a bunch of like kid actors because the apartment building was a new building. And it was in Burbank, kind of near the studios. And it were lots of like families from Cleveland that like their kid came to, and he had a recurring on Young Sheldon. And it just was weird to me. It was just so strange to, like, I can't imagine putting that pressure on my kid to, like, we're relocating the whole family because of your job, 11-year-old.
And you
like,
better make it.
Yeah. But anyway, that's a digression. Well, do you have like kind of dream projects to the side that you're sort of like,
you know,
and where do you want to be? Like, where do you think you're, I mean, aside from the two houses, yeah, that's, you know, that's a given,
you know, the home and pied-à-terre. I don't know, you know, like I have dreams of getting back in the theater, you know?
Yeah.
I've been enjoying reading plays a lot, and I miss going to see plays. It's been easier to read plays during quarantine just because reading a whole book in one sitting is insane. Even though I did just do that 2 days ago, I read this new book, The Vanishing Half, which was amazing. And I did it in like 6 hours on my couch and didn't move.
Just straight out. Yeah, wow.
Just straight through.
Oh my God. I would need a gallon of Adderall.
Is that good? But you know, like reading a play like is like reading a script, you know. So it's like I could pick one off my shelf and like read one whenever, you know. And you can read it in like an hour or so, a couple hours, you know. And so I've been doing that, and it's been making me miss that, just writing for people, but writing with when you're not like along for the ride, you know, like you feel involved, and like it's really your. It's you that you're putting out there, you know? I think that's the next step for me.
Do you think that's mainly because you would be, it would be a, your solo voice?
Yeah, my solo voice, my brain, you know? And like, I feel like right now people get my brain on like the podcast and like Twitter. And I'm like, it'd be so much nicer if they just only got, you know, my brain through something I've written. And then I could leave having to spread my thoughts every day.
Yeah. Do you ever, do you ever have any pilots that you've written? I mean, do you have pilots out there that you wrote?
I have one that, like, I have like a couple that like got me those jobs, you know? And so, you know, my writing is very theatrical too and like sort of insane, but just coming from like my background and stuff and like, so there are a lot of things that, you know, like people love to read, you know, but we'll see if someone makes them someday.
Yeah. Would you like to run a show? I mean, do you like the notion of that? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm currently, I did sell a show to Warner Brothers last year. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we're co-writing it with a friend. So we'll see if that goes somewhere. He would be the one running it, but, has more TV experience, but you know, that's fun. But just hoping to go and be in public again. That's what I'm hoping for more than
you and everybody. That's quite a unique feeling.
I even miss a dumb like event in this city, you know? Like a premiere of some show or movie that you don't even really care about, but you know, going to get free drinks and passed around apps. Like, I miss that.
Right, right. Music's so loud you can't talk to anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the same. I'm kind of, you know, I'm like kind of a, I have a curmudgeonly side to me that sort of likes to go home and that is only good for about an hour out. But now I'm like, I think I could do 2 hours at a boring party. I'm starved. I'm starved for just kind of just to see people. Like,
yeah,
it is kind of like aside from the grocery store, like you're never around more than five or six people, you know, like, mm-hmm. I just think about being in a room with 10 people, you know, and like.
The people not in your bubble, it's funny because it's like, those are the people that you see out. Like, have you experienced being like at the grocery store and like you see someone you know, like across the aisle and you do the like sort of like high wave? And
yeah. No, I've seen, I haven't seen. Yeah. Or in like then the elbow touch or something yeah. like that. Or, you know, I've seen people. Well, because like I'll go to, you know, we're taping the Conan show at Largo.
Mm.
And so I'm seeing people, which has been like that's been about a month that I've been getting to go do that. And oh my God, it's like, oh my God, I have a place to go.
Yeah.
Like it elevated my mood by 60%. Just the fact that I had a schedule that I had to meet,
absolutely,
which is yeah. kind of sad in a way, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that I feel like what's got me together is, like, we've had the podcast, we do it every week. So,
yep.
like, that schedule has stayed, even though I'm doing it from home, it's still the exact same weekly routine that I've had for the past 3 years.
Yeah, and it's a conversation.
Yeah.
There's so many days when I, like, taping a podcast like I'm doing, like, with you, I mean, my kids will be over later, but, you know, like with you, it's like this could have been the only conversation I have all day. And I kind of like, I was like, whew, that's, you know, it's like nourishment in a way. Well, what's the point of your story? Like, what do you think, you know, like, or is there advice you have for people? I mean, this kind of a summation kind of. The point, statement.
The point of me story, you know, I just think that I could get lofty about, you know, like wanting to tell stories, you know, and like that are important, and like seeing stories like myself and stories that I hadn't seen when I was like reading comic books or watching TV. But, you know, it's really just the thing that like someone like me who did not like you said, was reading comic books, there weren't like that many black superheroes or gay ones, you know, and watching like TV as a kid, like consuming everything. I dreamed that I wanted to do that. I've thought about doing it all the time. And now I'm doing it, you know? And so I just want to keep pulling things out of my brain and putting them down. And that makes me happy. And so,
yeah,
I hope that makes other people happy too.
Yeah. Are there people that seek out advice? You
sometimes, yeah, sometimes I feel like I'm awful at giving advice.
Really?
Because I'm like, oh, what should you do? Well, I don't know, move to LA, work in a coffee shop,
mm-hmm.
get fired from that one, work in another one, quit that one, get fired in another one, and eventually get a job at like a site like BuzzFeed.
Yeah, worked yeah.
with that for years. Start a podcast and then get a TV career from having a podcast. But don't know many people doing that. But if yeah. you can follow that exact path, then
I know. When people have asked me sometimes, like if I like, I just feel like, what am I supposed to say? Like, well, take some improv classes and then become a late night talk show sidekick for a number of years. Like,
you know, it's funny how time just even passes fast, you know, because it's like, it'd be wild for someone to even do that job of yours.
Oh, I know.
Again. And for me, it's like, it would have to be a different site, you know, from like, even like a BuzzFeed, you know, because like, that's not the same. They're not producing content in the same way that they were in like 2014, where someone could join it and then like, get an internet presence and then like move on to something else, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And those sites kind of really are, there aren't many of them. And the ones that are there almost kind of seem old. You yeah, know what I mean?
Old, or like there's so many people now. And so it's harder to stand out, you know? And so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking some time.
Nice to talk to you today.
Yeah, it's good to talk
to you. Started my day, to be honest. And now I'm gonna do a Starbucks run before I see my trainer today. So that's
nice. Cool. How do you manage the trainer?
Well, I've been doing Zoom all summer and all quarantine. And now on weekdays, one day of the week, because another friend who lives nearby also has the same trainer. He will come and work out with us in our backyard.
Okay.
Not this week because he just had a baby. His wife.
Oh my gosh.
His wife just had a baby 2 weeks ago, so now he's like staying at home, like, and COVID stuff and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be a while before I see him IRL again.
Well, I haven't done a goddamn thing since COVID hit, so. Physically. So. I respect what you're doing.
I told you, Andy, kudos. That I've had it with Twitter and it's about Instagram now. So we're working on.
Oh, I get it. It's not for health reasons. It's for your takeover of show business.
It's purely vanity.
Well, nice. Good for you.
Thank you.
All right, Ira, thank you so much. And thank you all out there for listening to the three questions. And we will get back at you next week.
I've got a big, big love for you.
The Three Questions with Andy Richter is a Team Coco and Earwolf production. It's produced by me, Kevin Bartelt, executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Chris Bannon and Colin Anderson at Earwolf. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, associate produced by Jen Samples and Galit Sahayak, and engineered by Will Becton. And if you haven't already, make sure to rate and review The Three Questions with Andy Richter on Apple Podcasts.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.